Hey, Mac Geeks, it's Wednesday, February 9th, 2005. This is your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by a Mac Geek. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. Opening music is brought to you by Manda and the Marbles. It's a song called Say Anything, and you can visit the band at mandaandthemarbles.com. All right, things are going to sound a little different on the MacCast today. I'm actually recording from the car studio. I'm going up tonight to meet a bunch of other podcasters, and I'm not going to have a chance to record the show this evening, so I'm doing it on my lunch hour in the afternoon, and I'm in the car, so you're going to, you might hear some trucks or other cars driving by. It might sound a little strange, but I wanted to make sure you got your show today, and hopefully it's not too distracting for you. All right, going to jump right in to the news. iPod Shuffle Raid. There is a guy who did a little project, and I've linked to it from the show notes. It's kind of cool to see. But he built a RAID out of iPod Shuffles. So he took four iPod Shuffles, I think the 1 gigabyte models, and got a little USB hub, stuck them together, and actually created a hardware RAID out of iPod Shuffles. He was going to try and install Mac OS X on it, but actually Mac OS X won't let you install onto a RAID, apparently. So it didn't work, but it does mount as a hard drive on his Macintosh desktop and appears as just like one 3.8 gigabyte drive. Anyway, there's a link for the show notes. Check it out. The picture is pretty cool. It's just fun to look at, a good little experiment on something to do with iPod Shuffles. It's a hell of a way, a very expensive way to get a 4 gigabyte external drive that's not even really that portable because you got to have it hooked into this USB hub. All right, Google is doing something interesting this week. They came out with the beta version of their mapping software. They're going to go try and compete with Yahoo Maps and MapQuest. And you can check it out at maps.google.com. I took a look. They got some really cool interactive features. You can pan around the map. When you plug in locations, it actually puts in little point markers with drop shadows. It's a really nice looking interface. But check it out if you're looking for another mapping software and want something to compete with or to compare against MapQuest and Yahoo Maps. So the word on the street is we're not going to be seeing a satellite iPod anytime soon. Looks like the CEO of Sirius Satellite Radio had sat down and talked with Steve Jobs and is now saying in some interviews that Apple has really no interest in putting satellite radio on the iPod at the moment. So this could be a classic case of Steve just trying to divert attention from things that he might be really working on, or maybe they're seriously not considering it. Personally, I don't see the demand for a portable satellite radio. I have some friends who have satellite radios, XM satellite radios, and they're pretty much line of sight. Unless you have them outside, you can't really listen to anything on them. So, a guy at work actually has one and he has to run an antenna. He's on an inside cubicle. He had to run an antenna all the way out to an exterior window in order to get the satellite radio. So, I'm not so sure portable satellite radio is such a great thing. If anybody does have a portable satellite radio, one of the new XM ones or Sirius ones, send in a comment and let us know how that works for you and if you think it would be a good addition to the iPod. But, I just don't see it happening. In iTunes news, it looks like with the Grammys this week, they're airing, I think, the 13th of February on CBS, but there's going to be a special performance of John Lennon and Paul McCartney's song Across the Universe, and it's going to be recorded, and Apple's going to be selling the recording on the iTunes Music Store for 99 cents, and all the proceeds from the sales of that track are going to go to the tsunami relief. So pick that up on Apple iTunes and help support the tsunami effort more. I'm sure if you're like me, you've already given some, and it doesn't hurt to give a little bit more. finally in the news, we've been talking recently a little bit about Linux and Yellow Dog Linux running on the Macintosh. We talked about the company that's actually selling Apple hardware with Yellow Dog Linux pre-installed in lieu of Mac OS X. TerraSoft, who makes Yellow Dog Linux, has brought out a new version of its software, updated the software today, and they now support the Mac Mini as well as the iMac G5s. And I was looking through the release notes here, and it looks like they fixed it so now Sleep works, and support for the thermal cooling, basically controlling the controller fans on the G5 towers, which is really important. I guess that wasn't supported in Yellow Dog Linux before. And there's a number of other updates, 70 in all. So if you are running Yellow Dog Linux on your Mac, you may want to pick that up. I personally haven't run it, but again, if somebody out there has some experience with Yellow Dog Linux, we're actually going to, I do know of one listener, and we're going to try and set up an interview sometime soon here when I get some time. I've been extremely busy. But if anybody else wants to just record some comments on how Yellow Dog Linux is working for them and send it in, I'd be happy to share it with the rest of the MacCast listeners. All right. That's the news. Today we have a review, another listener review. A friend of the show, Doug, was very kind and sent over a really great review of the iPod Shuffle, so I'm going to play that for you. Runs about 7 minutes, and then we'll talk about some feedback and comments I've been receiving.
Hey, Adam, this is Doug. I'm here in Central Illinois, United States of America. I have your iPod Shuffle review. This is a pretty cool piece of equipment that Apple's made. It's the brand new. This is the 1 gigabyte version I have. It also comes in the 512 megabyte version. That's the 512 runs about $100. This is the $149.99 version. Just a side note, I ordered this on a Saturday evening and had it by Wednesday afternoon, which that's pretty good turnaround for Apple. They did a really good job, so kudos to them for getting that out, because my shipping stats on it said it was going to take 3 to 6 weeks to get this thing, so I'm very happy to have this. It's going to be really cool, and I love it, so here it goes. On the front, well, actually, let's start with the size. The size of this is itty-bitty. I mean, when it says it's the size of a pack of gum or less, it is definitely less than a pack of gum. It's about the size, width of a car key. You know, if you have like a Ford car key or something like that, it's about the size of a car key. It's a little bit thicker than a car key, but not a whole lot. It weighs less than an ounce. I think it says 0.78 of an ounce. That's small. The controls on the front, very easy. You have play pause in the center. The little ring around it has next and previous song. It also has the volume controls for up and down, which those work really well too. The one thing I didn't like about the controls, if you hold down the next or previous buttons, it'll scan the song. It'll scan forward or scan backwards. I really didn't like, it doesn't scan fast enough for my liking, but you know, to each his own on that. It scans a little slow for me, but maybe there'll be a software update in the future that'll fix some of that. Anyway, on the top, you put your headphone jack in. By the way, the headphones that come with it are your standard Apple headphones. They come with, you know, I think all iPods. They aren't the ones that have the nice little silicone tips on them, so the bass sounds better. But after a while, after about 30 minutes or so, these start to hurt your ears a little bit. At least they hurt mine. They just start to get a little sore because they're a little large to be putting in your ears. But overall, they actually sound pretty good. Not a bad little thing to throw in there. You also get the software in the box, the iTunes software, and the software updater feature. They say you're supposed to run that for the first time, but the software is at 1.0 for the Shuffle, so they haven't had anything, you know, new come out for that. But you also get in the box the lanyard, which is kind of cool. It basically is just got a little a string that's got just a little connector in the bottom, and you just plug it into that, and you can throw it around your neck, and you'll go for a jog or whatever. You know, tuck it in your shirt and just go for a jog. That's pretty handy too. I liked it. It was a good length on it. Works good. Sticks in there real tight. I went jogging with it the first day I had it, and was really impressed that it didn't want to come unclipped. So it stays in there nice and tight. So if you think, and it doesn't look like it's going to wear out because it's got little ball bearings in the bottom that help it keep it stay on. So that's really nice too. If you flip the iPod Shuffle over, it's got your off button followed up by the repeat. I guess, function. It's also got the shuffle function at the very bottom, so by if you move your thumb down, it will actually, you know, go to shuffle or repeat, which is works really good. The repeat function actually plays your songs straight through as they are on the iTunes playlist. I thought that was really cool, too. So you know exactly the order your music's going to play based on your iTunes playlist. I thought that was really cool. It also has the autofill feature on the iTunes playlist. And if you combine that with a smart playlist function, like I do for all my podcasts, they all have the podcast genre of podcast. And that way when I get all my podcasts in from iPod or X, I can just hit the autofill feature and it will actually automatically fill all of my fill my iPod up with all my new podcasts because of the smart podcast, the smart playlist feature. And that makes it really cool. Below the power button. Actually, another thing about the power button is if you're listening to something and you need to turn it off for whatever reason, you turn it off. It's been my experience thus far that everything I've turned off, I've turned off in the middle of, has actually come right back on in the exact same spot. So it's got a nice resume feature. You don't have to start over, which was something I was worried about because, you know, if you're a half hour into an hour and a half podcast and, you know, you don't want to get skipped. You know, you don't have to start all over or scan through it. And with the scan feature being as slow as it is, that could take you a while. So that was really cool, too. Next, moving on down below the power button is actually the battery status button. And if you press that while the iPod is off, you'll get a little green light or an orange light, and it'll tell you the battery status of your iPod, which is really cool, too. That's very handy. So you know if your battery's getting low. Another way you can check, too, is it may flash at you and stuff like that, but inside the box for the iPod, you get a little playing card, fits in your wallet, and it has what all the lights and everything mean on your little iPod shuffle, and that's a really, really handy thing, too, because I needed that the first couple times to see what certain things meant. It tells you, you know, if it's flashing while it's plugged in, that means do not remove, and even though it doesn't have a display, I think it's very, very cool, very, very handy, and they made it very easy to use. You couldn't ask for a much better little MP3 player for somebody who doesn't want a large iPod. This thing is spectacular. It also has the option to save files to it as well as music. If you open up iTunes, you can go to the iPod preferences, and there's a slider bar there that you can allocate how much space you want for music, how much space you want for data. And I've never had another iPod, so I don't know, but very, very cool. That's about it for the iPod. iPod Shuffle, I guess. It works great. It's not a bad price. For somebody who's very active or on the go or exercises or whatever, this is a really cool option. It's very light, it's easy, and you don't have to worry about skipping. It's got, you know, non-skip playback. So pick it up. Oh, it's also got a hold feature, too. If you hold down the play-pause button for 3 seconds, you also get a button hold feature, which is really cool. So if you're kind of bumping around and working out hard or whatever, and you happen to bump it a couple times, you're not going to skip your tunes over. So that's it. Thanks a lot, Adam. We'll see you later.
All right, Doug. Thanks for that great review. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about a couple more things here. I had listener Antonio and he wanted to make some comments. We talked on the last show about the new music service coming from Napster, the subscription service, which is basically all you can download, but the minute you stop paying for the service, all your music goes away. And Antonio made a good point about something else to think about. So I'll let him comment on that.
Hey, Adam. This is Antonio. Figured instead of emailing you like I usually do, I send you this MP3. Maybe you get to play it on the podcast. Anyway, I'm really enjoying your podcast, and I'm definitely enjoying your personal commentary on the Mac news that you're reporting. I'd say keep it up because it sounds great. I wanted to make some comments about the Napster subscription service. It doesn't seem that anybody is talking about the viability of Napster as a company. Who's going to guarantee that Napster is going to be around in 2 to 3 years? I figure there's a good chance that Apple will still be here in the future, but what about Napster? I mean, no one's saying that they're going to be around in a couple of years. If they go out of business in a few years, how are you going to get to access your music then? So if you spend a few hundred dollars, in the end, you'll probably end up with Zip. Seems like a gamble to go with a Napster method of business. So just wanted to make that point that no one seems to be making. Anyway, keep up the good work. The podcasts are great, and I'm looking forward to more of them in the future. Take care, Adam.
So Antonio makes a good point, something certainly to think about. Another thing I wanted to tell you in terms of MP3s for your iPod and purchasing music is the former founder of MP3.com and the current runner of Linspire, which was Lindo's until Microsoft sued them. Just announced his new effort, and he's getting back into the MP3 market with MP3Tunes.com, which will let you purchase for 88 cents a track and $8.88 an album MP3 music that it has no digital rights management on it, so it's not protected at all. They're focusing on independent artists, and so it's sort of like if you've been to emusic.com, they also sell non-DRM'd MP3 files, but they use a subscription model. MP3Tunes.com is going to use a purchase model. I popped over and took a listen at their library. I did not recognize any artist in their library at all, but hopefully that'll change. Hopefully they'll be able to build up, but we'll see how far they get with that. Certainly send me your comments and thoughts on the new service if you go over to MP3Tunes.com, and the 3 is the number 3. Check it out and let me know what you think. All right, we're going to have Doug come back and talk to us. Last show I had a listener, Michael, who was requesting that people come forward and share their stories in switching from PC to a Macintosh, and Doug was kind enough to send in another MP3 and let us know what his experience was.
Hey, Adam, this is Doug. I just thought I'd send you a quick switcher story. It's my own personal story. I was using a PC for a long, 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 long time, since way back. Never used a Mac. I got a job where in education where I was using a Mac a little bit more often. I have a G3 400 PowerBook, which I still use now and have had for a little while now, and I absolutely love it. It does everything I want it to do, just like his. Every time I close the lid 100 times, you know, a day, and never ever had a problem with it waking up, going to sleep, any of that. One thing I wanted to do was kind of get this in my house. My home machine was, you know, an XP machine, and it worked fine, didn't have any problems, until one day everything just kind of went crazy. And I couldn't get it to stop crashing, and, you know, yada, 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 the usual array of Windows problems. So what I did was, my wife and I, we went to Indianapolis, and I was just goofing around, and I saw at a store they had a G4 500 sitting on the floor, and I just asked the guy how much he wanted for it, and, you know, he told me, and I was like, well, it's a perfect deal. It was cheap. So, of course, he didn't know what he was giving away, and I brought it home. I bought OS X for it. I loaded it with RAM, put a hard drive in it, and it is probably the most useful machine I've ever used, much more useful than the Windows machine ever was. This does everything I want it to do. I do email, you know, internet. I do all my iPod stuff. I'm actually recording this on it right now. It does everything I want it to do. It plays DVDs, everything. It's really cool. The one problem I did have was I wanted to get all my office documents over. That wasn't a problem. I just basically just moved them over, just via a burned disk. And that wasn't a problem. Buying Office was a little expensive, but, you know, I figured this is going to be a pretty permanent move, so that's the way I went with it. And as far as my email went, I had a lot of email as well. I was already using Thunderbird from Mozilla, Mozilla Thunderbird, for quite a while, and actually had all my email on that, and that all exported okay, and I actually got it all in to Thunderbird for OS X just fine. I believe they use the same formats and stuff. It went really, really smooth. If you're using Outlook, do your best to get over to, you know, a Thunderbird or some other type of mail client before you go over to OS X. I just had some friends that did the same type of deal, and they had a real problem going from Outlook or Outlook Express to the OS X platform with whatever email client they were wanting to use. I believe they were using Mail. So overall, my experience was very smooth, very good. My printer plugged in, worked right away, didn't have any problem with that. My USB card reader had no problem, picked everything up. And by far, this is the easiest machine I have ever used. So, all right, Michael, well, I hope that helps. Take it easy. Keep macking.
So, Michael, you can see switching should be a pretty pleasurable experience. Obviously, there's some issues to think about with email, and you know, I know that was one of your concerns. If anybody else has some other tips they might want to offer switchers, certainly send an email, send an audio comment, or call the hotline and let us know. All right, last thing I want to open up is I want to comment on a Mac News Daily post of some information from a Fortune article, I guess a thing where Fortune talks to Steve Jobs. And apparently the news is that the three biggest PC makers are still trying to contact Apple, contact Steve, and convince them to license Mac OS X or create a version of Mac OS X that will run on Intel chips, or no mention of AMD. They specifically cite Intel chips, but anyway, basically get Mac OS X to run on PC hardware. And the main reason why seems to be because of all of the viruses and spyware and, you know, the bad things that are going on with Windows. And they're looking for a way to offer customers alternatives, which I think is great, but I'd rather see them, you know, switch over to Apple hardware. But it brings up an interesting debate, and we have this at my office from time to time, and it's, you know, what would happen if Apple did sell OS X, a version of OS X to run on PC hardware, and how would that hurt them and or potentially help them? You know, I think Apple does pretty well with their hardware, and they make quite a bit of their profit there. So if people get really cheap PCs and run OS X, which is, you know, kind of the core of the Macintosh experience, then you know, Apple may take some hits there. But on the flip side of it, you say, well, you know, maybe they'll sell a ton, you know, tons more copies of the operating system and make up the money there. I don't know. It's definitely something to think about. The other thing that is kind of obvious to me is part of the reason why Macs are so stable and easy to use and work so well is that the hardware is controlled. You don't have, you know, Joe Schmo's PCI card or AGP card in there that you have to support, and that's why we don't have all these, you know, multiple driver issues and things like that. You know, the hardware has definitely opened up in recent years, and Apple's done a good job of making it stay user-friendly and seamless in terms of installing new hardware and upgrading and things like that. But, you know, it could be a slippery slope if Apple tries to make OS X run on, you know, PC hardware that potentially has, you know, any component coming out of Taiwan or China in it, and you just don't know what it is, and it's going to make it really hard for them to say that they have the, you know, just install and go kind of operating system that we have now. So it'd be interesting to hear what you guys think about it. You know, is it a good idea for Mac OS X to be running on Intel hardware, or should we just keep you know, creating great products like the iPod and the Mac Mini that make PC users just want to, you know, change hardware? I think Apple's strategy should be, hey, let's get them to convert. Let's get them to buy Macs and leave the PCs in the dust. But that's just my opinion. Anyway, that's the show. Hopefully the extra noise with the car studio wasn't too distracting. Let me know what you think about that. I might be doing more of these from the car just because of how time is. I'm getting tons of great feedback on the show, the popularity taking off, and I'm, you know, answering more and more emails every day and getting more audio feedback, and I think it's great, you guys, so keep it up. Visit the website for the show notes, maccast.com. As always, you can contact me, send email to maccast@gmail.com, and, you know, please call the voice line. Nobody calls the voice line, I guess maybe because of the long-distance charges. Maybe at some point, if I can start making some money at this thing, then maybe I can get an 800 number. But until then, 206-222-2788, 20-MACCAST-8, to leave a voice comment, and that will just send me an audio file that I can play back on the show. So if you want to make an audio comment, but you don't want to have to set up a rig, that's a great way to go. I don't think the long-distance charges should be too high, especially if you call from, say, a cell phone where you have free coverage. Anyway, I'm going to leave you today with new music from a band called Levy. The track is called On the Dance Floor. Enjoy it. If you like what you hear, you can visit them at www.levytheband.com. That's LevyTheBand.com. And let them know you heard the track on the Maccast. All right, I'm out. Gonna go meet up with the podcasters tonight and see what's going on in the community. Thanks for listening, and I will see you all next time.